you can host the best backyard barbecue. When you find a professional on Angie to make your backyard the best around. Connect with skilled professionals to get all your home projects done well. Inside to outside, repairs to renovations. Get started on the Angie app or visit Angie.com today. You can do this when you Angie that.
Fill her up.
You're listening to the Gas Digital Network.
What is up, my fellow addicts? What a treat we have for you today. If you're over 30, you fucking love this dude. We're talking about Bruce McCullough from Kids in the Hall. They just rebooted the show. There's a new documentary. The new episodes are doing great. It's just really fun. And me and Dave Landau got to basically live out our childhood fantasies and ask him every fucking Kids in the Hall question we've ever wanted to ask in a great hour, and just a super cool dude. If you're a fan of Kids in the Hall, you could have heard this 5 days ago and commercial free simply by going to gasdigitalnetwork.com using the code SDR. You get 20% off a 7-day free trial. Try it out. You don't like it, cancel your membership. Who gives a shit? But maybe you like it and maybe you stay. But if not, all I want you to do is spread the love. Tell people about the show. Tell people about some of the crazy shit we've done on the show, the great guests that we get. And maybe you've solicited a new fan to join the SDR show and our increased popularity, because I said this recently. We're in the top 100 on comedy. So thank you, everybody, for spreading the love. And here it is right now from Kids in the Hall, Bruce McCullough on the SDR show.
This is the intro to the shit show. Sex, drugs, and rock and roll. This is the hit show. Show me a tit show. Please, someone walk the hole. It's weed, I beat. It's hookers and blow. It's art, it's art. You need to know.
It is the SDR show, Sex, Drugs, and Rock and Roll show. I am Ralph Sutton. We are back once again. Dave Landau in Texas.
Hello. Yes.
How are you, buddy?
Good, man. How about you?
I like when you come on to fill in the co-host shoes. I'm a little under the weather. I think this crazy weather has given me a little froggy
monkey
in my throat.
Pox?
Yeah, I have monkey pox mixed with COVID, some sort of weird, some weird combination. It's some sort of super spreader event in my apartment, I feel. It's not good. All right, so let's just say this. A part of... if you're over 35, I think that's a fair assessment. This show meant the world to you, and now finding a whole new audience. I power watched the entire new season and the documentary. There's so much to get into, from Kids in the Hall, not only that, but a director of Superstar, from the new show Tall Boys as well. I mean, the list goes on and on. Bruce McCullough, how are you, sir?
So nice to be here. I'm doing great.
Where are you right now? Are you in Canada or are you in the United States?
Hollywood? I'm in Toronto, Canada.
You are?
Yeah, that was my Kevin voice. I put my finger up too, like Kevin McDonald does.
Well, let me just start by saying this. I don't want to get into the fandom. We'll get into it all later. But to do prep work, I turn on the first episode of the new season. Did not expect to see Kids in the Hall cock within the first 5 minutes.
Immediately.
Yeah, no, that was most disturbing for myself because I had to be there.
Well, have you seen their penises before?
Oh, constantly, but usually just rushing past me as we were changing or backstage or something like that. I mean, we had done actually a scene that we did live many times called Naked for Jesus. But that was way in the old days when there was no camera phones. So
right.
Phones didn't have cameras. So, yeah. And the great thing about how stupid Kevin and Dave are, like the dumbest, smart, but really dumb guys, is Amazon actually wanted to pixelate those. And they said, we will die on this hill. We are showing them old and ugly and we do not care because it was funnier for the joke.
Right. Did I see Kevin is uncircumcised? Or is he just so old that his penis looks weird?
I think he's trying to retreat back into his body. And I would.
Yeah.
I think that's from under or overuse or both. I'm not sure.
By the way, that kind of touches on something when in watching the documentary. Well, let me ask you this first. What came first, the documentary or the idea to do the new season?
We've been picking at that documentary for a long time. And Mark's brother actually was starting to do it. And I think it came to life a little bit more when we got the Amazon season. So, then we had a home for it. So we sort of did it. And some of the stuff we did interviews as we were at the end of the shoot, mm-hmm. but we've been picking at it for a while, or they have.
Okay. Now,
this is, I love how it started with Brain Candy breaking even. I just want to say that. Although yeah. that was one of my favorite movies of all time.
Thank you. I'm going to say what I should never say. That was my idea. I wrote that, but it's humorously haunted us for all our lives. And it's like, you know, I remember a few years ago when we started doing like live tapings or not, sorry, tapings, live readings with music and stuff of Brain Candy. And it's like, okay, if we can revisit our darkest time, then we're in pretty good spirits together, you know? And it was a dark time which Scott's brother killed himself. Dave was fighting. Kevin's father was in a hotel room drunk saying he wouldn't leave until his son came and told him he loved him. It's like, it was a crazy time.
And then the movie didn't do so well on top. I'm sure if the movie did phenomenally well, maybe that would have helped heal some wounds, but it was like rubbing salt into the wound that the movie didn't do that well. But did it do really that badly, or just didn't do as well as you expected?
No, the thing that the documentary doesn't really talk about, which is partially it was my insistence to do Cancer Boy, which made
Whistle them, While You're Low.
Yeah, which made me them take away all the ad revenue that they were going to get. They were going to give us lost millions of dollars in ad revenue because I was asked to keep Cancer Boy in the film. And I remember having a talk with this guy who financed it. It wasn't Paramount. It was another guy. And I talked to him for about an hour and I said, it has to be in the movie because my mom died of cancer. Mm-hmm. And of course my mom is alive today and she's never had cancer. She's had 7 heart attacks, but that's what you do when you got to get cancer. But that is the way we are. And I think that's kind of the cool thing perhaps about us. And, you know, with the doing the 6th season, as we call it, mm-hmm. it being embraced, I think, is because we never really, you know, we weren't Kevin Hart. We weren't gigantic. Right. We were just this thing that you liked and we were like you and we're still around. Wow.
Does that mean, by the way, because it's funny that you say that back then, which is like, I don't know when the movie came out, 25 years ago, 28 years ago, whatever mm-hmm. it is, that you were going to die on that hill. And now Kevin and Dave want to die on the hill of not showing their ding dongs. They would get mad. So that means that your sensibilities of that punk rock, fuck you, this is going in, has sustained for 3 decades.
Well, we have not learned one thing. Individually, we have, perhaps, but together, collectively, no, we have not.
Does it upset you that of all of you, the person that aged the best is the guy in the towel? He looks the best.
Yeah, he looks the same.
Oh, yes, but he has an exhaustive regime that doesn't only involve thieves oil, but all kinds of creams. And, you know, he eats a lot of live fish, which apparently is very good for your skin and your digestive.
Live fish?
Yeah. Like goldfish. He's like 50 goldfish a day, yeah. I think.
Voodoo and potions.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Had you guys, because I know in reading and doing some research, they do touch a little bit in the documentary that, like you said, during Brain Candy, there was a court case involved at some point and there was some anger and animosity. Once you guys started doing the reunion shows again a few years later and the reboot that came a few years later, have you stayed friends and close, or has there always been tension until this new reboot?
Oh, no, there's always been kindness and love. I mean, we fought more. You know, no one teaches young men from places like Alberta that you're not supposed to actually fight for your ideas or whatever mm-hmm. that is. And so we've always loved each other, but we fought. Now we don't really fight. We just go, oh, really? Is that the one you want to do, Kevin? Okay. But no, I think we're fairly kind to each other. And, you know, but the reunion tour has helped that. I mean, there's nothing, you know, more fun than doing the road a little bit, right? You knock over Portland and then you get on the bus and then you're going to go to San Fran for the next night. Like, that's fun. And I think doing the show isn't as much fun because you're up at 6 a.m. and stuff. But so, yes, that definitely made us, the next phase of us started in 2000. When we started doing touring.
You know, what's funny is that, oh, go ahead. Sorry, Dave.
What I was going to say, when you guys first started at like Comedy Sports, right? A long time ago.
Yep.
Were you initially, because I know you were kind of a punk rock kid and everybody else was, were you initially going directly to Irreverence as quickly as possible?
I think so. Like, I didn't, you know, the great thing is I walked on stage at Loose Moose Theater, which was in Calgary where I met Mark, and they had a thing called Theater Sports. And it's like,
yeah, that was like Theater Sports.
Yeah. I had no reference for this. I'd never seen live comedy. All of a sudden I was doing stand up and I just said, well, I should be bathed in red light. Well, that's not a traditional stand up thing. And why am I playing Iggy Pop? Because I think it was the right thing. And so, yeah, I had no frame of reference. And the great thing that you get to do this maybe only a couple times in your life is you just figure it out on your own who we were and what we wanted to do. And then we started to just write our little weird ideas and say, hey, maybe we should do some of those for the people who are coming for Theater Sports. And it was really that simple.
That's very cool.
Mike Myers is in the doc, and I was listening recently to another podcast that he was on with Will Arnett called Smartless. And they were talking about how many comedians have come out of Canada. And it's because Canadians watch American comedy differently than Americans. Does that resonate with you at all? I don't even know what they meant by that, but that was something that they kept going back to, that you're like on the outside looking in to American comedy. And that's why so many comedians come out of Canada.
Yeah, well, I think it's those guys are too smart for me. I don't even know what that means, what they said. But I think that Canada is a bit different, that we're kind of watchers. We watch America. We see the mistakes you make, you Americans. We're sort of more a gentler people. But that doesn't mean inside we're not savage. Right. Mm-hmm. We don't want to score like Americans do, American comedians. We just want to make our little point and leave. And I think that's sort of the hallmark of Canadian comedy.
Okay. So now one thing also that you said in the doc, and I'm just curious about this. I'm sorry, Dave.
No, you're fine.
That you used to be obsessed with music and you aren't anymore. Do you remember when that change happened? Because I still feel like I'm still at this age crazy about finding new bands and trying to discover new music. It's a two-parter. So that's part one. And part two is, did you ever encounter Glenn Danzig and to discuss the Grevo character and whether or not he liked it or not?
I don't know if he liked it or not. I know that they did a book about him that I was interviewed for that I didn't get around to reading. Sorry. but I don't know. Does anybody know him? I don't know if he'd have the sense of humor to know that was A, that I was him, and B, that that was a love letter to that crazy man.
I interviewed him a couple times. I met him a couple times. I wouldn't say that, you know, I don't have any feelings, positive or negative, but it was so obviously that that's where that was coming from.
Right.
That I'd be crazy to think that he wouldn't realize that.
And it became Happiness Pie.
Well, you're right. I did have him sell out. I guess I did convert a character and have him sell out. So maybe he might want to beat me up if he sees
it. But who knew you were so ahead of the curve on depression pills? I mean, really, you kind of predicted the next 15 years.
Well, that was, yeah, it was the first time around. Yeah, it was a big thing. And then, mm-hmm. of course, with comedians, I think Scott ended up being on some at some point, or maybe he didn't.
Oh, I'm on them.
Yeah, but it's like, well, the whole thing was, well, you're not going to be funny if you're on anything. And we've had bad times. I don't know if we're depressive as a group. Maybe Dave a bit. I think Dave's had lifelong bits of, you know, things and bouts of things and has terrible times sleeping, you know, and he microdoses constantly. But other than that, you know, we're all fine.
Yeah. Well, I did love when Kevin goes to kill himself in the movie, when he's like, did you give the gun a good cleaning? And then he shoots, 16 times until he hits a vein and bleeds out.
Yeah.
I love the darkness of it, though. I grew up in Detroit, so I had the CBC, and I just love the way that it was a darker comedy that I really got in the States, and I was a kid, so it would air, and I don't know. It was just something that connected with me different than any other kind of comedy.
Well, thank you. I actually remember one of our first shows was in Detroit. There was this weird little 500-seat theater that we sold out 6 times, wow. And we went, and we didn't know that anybody knew our show or knew us, and we went on stage and started, and people rushed the stage, you know.
Oh, yeah. We were like, huge fans.
What do we do now? Like, but it was like, that was the city in which was like, wow, there was something going on here for us.
Yeah, for sure.
Well, that's what's wild also, is that I didn't know that it was canceled after the first season and then came back once you guys won an award or whatever it was. Like, then I was trying to think, like, well, how did I know it so well? And then you bring it up, and it was on constantly on Comedy Central. Like, you would, anytime you turned on Comedy Central back then, it was either Saturday Night Live reruns or Kids in the Hall reruns. And that's how I think most of people my age, I'm 52. If you didn't catch the original runs, that's how you got obsessed with Kids in the Hall. It was on all the time.
Yeah. And if it's odd, if you see it over and over, you kind of, it kind of wears you down. Oh, 30 Helens agree. I kind of get it after I've seen it a few times. And so I think the repetition always helped us.
Oh, for sure. And in but fact, Jack, it was one
Jack Nicholson answering machine, though. I just have to throw it out there. Just thank you for that. I've always wanted to say it's still the funniest thing. You getting furious with your wife for not doing the answering machine correctly while you hold your hair up to do the this is Jack Nicholson.
I wonder if that's based on what a cruel little bastard I actually am.
So funny.
Delve into the shadows of the mind with Sleeping Dogs, a gripping murder mystery starring Academy Award winner Russell Crowe. Now available on digital. Crowe portrays an ex-homicide detective unraveling a brutal murder he can't recall. Uncovering secrets from his past, he learns a chilling truth. It's best to let sleeping dogs lie. Visit sleepingdogsmovie.com/wondery to watch Sleeping Dogs, now on digital. That's sleepingdogsmovie.com/wondery.
So also you and sorry, I'm going to cough 1 second.
It's fine.
Jesus Christ, dying. You and Mark were hired for one season on SNL, and you both clearly said you didn't enjoy it too much. Was there any sketches that you did get on the air that you were proud of, or did that not even happen?
Oh, no, we did. I remember writing a pretty good one with Joan Cusack and Pee Wee Herman. That was a pretty good one. And Mark wrote a piece for Madonna, which was pretty cool. But no, not a lot. I think I got weirder in response to them not liking my stuff. Like it got weirder and weirder. Mm-hmm. And it's just like, oh, I'm not really fitting in here. And I wrote The Liar a lot. I go to John and say, hey, do you need some help? Do you need some jokes? And then so it felt like I at least had a job there, you know, because if you're on SNL, you know, and you see a writer who doesn't have a piece in by about Wednesday, they've got sallow look in their eyes and they're probably nipping from that little bottle. And they're, you know, it's a sad time. Everyone's running around and you got nothing to do right for next week. You know,
how long were you actually there?
Just one season. Yeah.
One season. And did you both hate it equally? Did Mark want to stay longer? Like, or
well,
you
Mark
both
was
knew-
a cast member
yeah,
later.
Mark
right,
got to be on cast for a little while, right?
And you directed some shorts, though, didn't you?
I did some shorts.
Yeah.
And then Lauren offered me a really cool job, which I should have taken later on, which is like, you know, come to New York and do a film every week with the host that you just write. It's like, well, that seems like a good idea, but I don't want to. but yeah, I think Mark went there kind of famously didn't fit in, I don't think, or maybe he'd been on TV too long to be bringing out his characters. I don't know if it was. Somebody else might have a better analysis. I don't know if it was an organic fit for him, because also we have our own show and there's 20 people who are writing and there's 12 cast members. We were just always trying to fill up our show. So in a certain way, you can do almost anything you want, which is not sadly the way it works at SNL. You watch it and you go, oh, was Aidy Bryant in tonight? Oh yeah, she had that one little part or she was all over the show. So I think it's, once you have your own show, truly own your show, which we did at Kids in the Hall, I think SNL can, even though it's exciting, can be a bit not as great.
But for that year, you and Mark are working in New York City. And did Dave, Kevin, and Scott try and keep Kids in the Hall alive, or were they doing something else?
They were doing that. And, you know, and we, it was Mark's idea. I didn't think it was right. I thought it was cruel. He flew them up to like come hang out with us. And they were like kind of writing with us. Like, who the fuck are these other Canadians in my office writing sketches? And it's like, so they just kind of kept it going. And then I think it was kind of like a lover's reunion once we finally went back and we did some shows in Canada again, which ultimately we got scouted by SNL, by Lauren himself to, oh, you guys have a good troupe. Well, maybe you should do a show. So it seems like it took forever, but it was actually only a year, the entire thing, in terms of from us being scouted to us kind of deciding with Lauren that we should do a show.
Was this when Lauren stepped away from SNL when you guys were discovered, or was he still actively a part of it?
No,
he already come back.
On his first year back.
It was his first year back. Okay.
Yeah. And with us, it's a different thing. You know, when you watch him do the show at SNL, he's like, you know, that it's his wife. We're his mistress, right?
Yeah.
And as you know, a mistress will do dirty things and bad that your wife won't. But he doesn't, he gave us some notes sometimes, like when we did the first tapings, he kind of yelled at us and did some stuff and shaved some of our stuff and said, this is better than that. This is better than that. But generally, no comments. Like we saw him when we were taping in New York, The Tonight Show. And I said to him, great exhaustive notes on all the cuts, Lauren. Thank you. And of course, he broke out laughing because I don't think he saw a thing, you know.
Quick. Yeah,
it's not for lack of care. It's like, oh, those guys are off doing their thing. They're cool. They got it.
So you also, by the way, cool. Which in me doing research, unaware of that, you put out a couple of, like, I'm going to say bizarre comedy music albums, because music has already been a part of your life. But I listened to some tracks from Drunk Baby Project and Shame Based Man, and they're definitely more out there. Is that something that you want to do? Another, I mean, it's been 10 years or 15 years since Drunk Baby Project. Is there another album in you to do that again?
Yeah, I think I'll do it. You know, I have a few songs that I wrote for the Amazon thing. Only one is in there, which is called I'm Not Crazy, I Just Lost My Glasses. But I'm kind of getting the urge again. And so, you know, I'm doing a show in a little while in New York, which has some music and some songs in it. And I'm
writing Bravery and Stupidity, which is at the Soho Playhouse in June.
Oh, thank you for that. Cool. So yeah, I'm feeling the urge to do that again, I think. Yeah.
I mean, boy, there's some really fun out there shit. It really was interesting. Do you play instruments also, or are you writing? Like, how does that come about?
I have a guitar, and I have my dad's Beatle bass, which he, mm-hmm. my dad was, he was a jazz cat and a salesman and a boozer in equal amounts. Actually, boozer more than any of the others.
A very specific brown one with the...
Yeah, that's beautiful. Yeah. It's a Paul McCartney really bass. I've got a beauty. And I thumped that bad boy. I've been pounding that bad boy for 30 years now.
Oh, wow.
That's cool.
I bought a lot of those, but never played them.
The new season is technically just, it's not a reboot. It's the sixth season with a 28 year break, right? That's basically the idea.
Yeah, because, you know, we had done a mini series called Death Comes to Town, which is right. Also an Amazon Prime. And you can get anything as fast as you want. And, you know, who cares?
Your idea. Death Comes to Town was your suggestion, right? At least that's what it says.
It was, because I just thought we weren't going to do, at that moment, we were touring, and I had like a one page outline of like, Death gets off a bus in a Northern Ontario town. What happens? Like, that was the whole thing. And everybody said, okay. But yeah, we enjoyed that. That was really interesting to do basically a mini mystery or whatever, murder mystery. But as time passed, we all knew, even without talking, which is that if we were going to do something again, it was going to be OG. It was going to be the original kind of series. It was the Shadowy Man. And I was like, if we don't get the Shadowy Man, then I ain't doing it. And because, you know, they were my best friends growing up. And, you know, Brian Connolly, the guitarist, is still the coolest guy in the world, still makes us cool. And once they said yes, and they said they would even record some new music and stuff, I was like, okay, there's no reason we shouldn't be doing this now.
And it also looks like in the intro, am I right that you found a couple of the people that were in the intro and you filmed them now?
Yes, we did. Famously, Darlene Harrison, who is a pregnant woman on the roof of, I think, the opening in season one, who's one of Scott's great friends. We filmed her again. We found a couple other people as well.
I would have to imagine. I don't want to be dark, but hey, you guys are a little dark to them, that you went to reach out to a couple of people and maybe they're not with us anymore. Did that not happen?
Probably, but they try to keep that information away from us because it would make us sad.
Yeah, I would imagine.
Or you would just film their headstones, I have a feeling.
Yeah, we could do that as well.
Yeah.
All right, before we go any further, maybe you're an auto mechanic. Maybe you're just a super cool do-it-yourself guy who works on his own car. Well, let me tell you about rockauto.com, the online store with every auto part at the best possible prices. Your one-stop shop for everything auto parts. rockauto.com has been in business for over 20 years, and they make it easy to find the parts you need at the best possible prices. No more talking to counter guys who need to order parts, or maybe they're not sure of what you're looking for, or never even have the part you want anyway. And even if they do, they're going to hassle you and charge you storefront markups. So why bother? Head over to rockauto.com and easily find everything you need, whether you're a mechanic, an auto shop, or just someone that likes to work on their own car. Everyone has the same access to the same incredible pricing at rockauto.com. How do I know they have incredible prices? It's simple. There's no promo code. You just go to rockauto.com. Everybody has the same access to the same incredible pricing. Just take a look. You might find some cool shit you didn't even think you wanted, and you end up buying it at rockauto.com. But when you do, tell them you heard about them on the SDR show. rockauto.com. All right, let's get back into it. All right, so let me ask you this. I watched a couple of interviews with you guys, and there was one interview with the four other guys, not with you. And they said 9 out of 10 infights that ever happened on the show always involved you. Would you agree with that?
I would say Scott is that person because, you know, I'm quite nice now, but I was the guy going, well, no, that should be in 2. And that other one should be in 2. And this other one should be in 2. And so I think I had a sense, it took me a while to go, oh, the show is good because we have different kinds of material. I thought my job was just to fight for my material all the time. And I think Scott would be fighting for crazy pieces that were written in blood and crayons on the back of cereal boxes and going, it's brilliant. Why, you know? And so, but if 4 out of 5 Kith say it, hey, it must be true.
How hard was it to figure out which stuff you were going to do a modern take on from the old stuff versus just flat out new material? Because you did you brought back the Eradicator, you brought back a few other things, but some that you didn't. So how did you kind of whittle that down?
It's just a one at a time thing. You know, if you write something that you have to get a good idea, especially for an old character. If you don't have a good idea, like if you have kind of a soft idea for like the Kathys or the Fran and Gordons or whatever, the other people will kind of go, oh yeah, it's okay, it's all right. So I think though the ones that we had, we really wanted to do. And then we started writing other ones that didn't end up making it. Kevin was doing one of his things, King of Empty Promises, which we all love. And he was writing another one. And then at one point went, no, this isn't as good as the original. Let's not do it.
And there was one like, I mean, it was kind of loosely based on These Are the Daves I Know. You did one with Mark.
I love that.
All the like people wearing the mask. Was it Mark? I think it was, where they all wear. It's kind of like a similar but modern take on that vibe, right?
Well, that's a crazy piece. I think that's the Flags of Mark, which was sort of his take on ego, which looks like he has a bunch of ego, but he doesn't have a bunch of ego. And it's as bizarre as he could make it. It's like, really? We have 2 forced perspective sets for this one? Okay, I guess we have Amazon money.
So you guys have always pushed against, you know, sort of, I don't know, the norm of society. Were you kind of trying to push against sort of the, I don't want to say PC because that just sounds kind of lame, but sort of the what's going on against comedy right now where people are just kind of like easily offended, even like the Mulaney show last week or anything, like kind of how, like, I heard Scott did the AIDS ferry in New York at the time where like AIDS was very prevalent. The audience was caught off guard. Is there a way that you're trying to deliberately sometimes push the boundaries for a reaction, or do you just kind of go with what you find funny?
Just what we find funny. And, you know, obviously we're not stupid. We are old white men in a very complicated time. And
sure,
you know, it's great that I do this show Tall Boys, which is a bunch of young black and brown people. And they're talking about race and they're different points of view. First Nations star from Alberta. It's fantastic. So I do understand that there's a different kind of, and I kept waiting for them to fight. I kept saying, hey, when do you guys fight? You know,
we get a couple together. Of them made it into one of the episodes too, right?
Yeah.
Two of them were in one of the episodes.
All 4 of them actually do little things. And it's like, but you know, we write what we write. We don't offend anyone. I don't think we really, so we're never out to offend anyone. You know, even, you know, the running F word, which I would probably have to say now, like that was, he's a folk hero. We're not making fun of gay people. Like, we're celebrating everyone. So I think that's why, because we think we're outsiders. We think we're weird. We think we don't quite make it. We're not good enough. We're those people. So that's our spirit. So we're not trying to put down anyone ever, I think.
But there's a term you use that I liked a lot, because if you think about it, you know, you said, I don't know who said this, but in the 90s, you guys were censored by the right. And nowadays, people are more censored by the left. And the term you use that I really like is, we are living in a context embargo, which is like, it could not be more true that context doesn't matter anymore.
Exactly.
Like you just said, running F word is celebrating that character. Now it's just, oh, that word is in it. You can't use it.
Buddy Cole was the first. I mean, he was one of the first openly gay people on television, really. Well, wasn't
at least
he?
Played by a gay man.
A gay man. Yeah. Positively. Yeah.
Yeah. And he was sex positive. He wasn't, he just didn't want to like you know, make your house look really nice with his design ideas. And
no.
Yeah, no, we, that's one of the great things about the documentary. And in fact, looking back from the series, if like an open-minded guy from Calgary who's heterosexual, who was chased down the streets for wearing nurse's shoes, you know, and beaten up, could be kissing Scott Thompson on the lips in the middle of the gay ravaged 80s,
right,
that means something. And what Scott did, he put on the line, and his point of view really did mean something. And at the time we were just working, but it's nice that he, you know, and that's the sweetest thing now when somebody comes up and they goes, oh, I was a queer kid, you know, up on the reservation, and your show was the only one we got. And I can talk to my dad about what I went through. Like, those stories are like why you get out of bed in the morning. And right. So,
right.
And a lot of it has to do with people who had awkward families, awkward coming outs, and we could help a little bit with that.
Absolutely. And right. Also what I liked about Scott's character too, was that even though he was very, I guess you'd say flamboyantly gay in those pieces, he'd be hitting the home run. He'd be doing, it wasn't just about the fact that he was gay. He was always the person of strength in the video, in the piece.
Yeah. And he was always getting lovers and juggling them. He wasn't like an old lech or anything. I mean, it was so funny. He's always been old, you know, it's just, he's older now, but it's like, he always felt like he's a lounge lizard who had been around forever and getting whatever he wanted, which kind of gave him his power.
That's pretty wild.
Now, yeah. I spoke from an angle that opened, like it showed you a side of that you weren't aware of that even existed. It would just tell you things. And even, you know, like I was in a 3-month marriage, or as you know, or I was with a guy for 3 months, or in straight years, you know, 5 eternities, you know, stuff like that, where he just sort of, kind of opened the doors to where nobody saw it before. I always found that amazing about the show.
Well, and even sometimes I'd say, is that a joke? I didn't know that was a joke. We go on tour.
Exactly.
Oh, that's a big joke. That's a big laugh. I didn't know that.
Before we go any further, if you are a responsible adult over the age of 21 and living in the states where Delta 8 is legal, unfortunately, no Delta 8 Empire is here this week. Empire? Delta 8 Empire? But I will just tell you, if you want to get high, I'd really super duper legally high. I'll try and do it ready. Yes. That's kind of Jay, I guess. Well, then it's time to go to yodelta.com, where you can stock up on high-quality lab-tested Delta 8. So if you're over the age of 21 and you're in the majority of the states where this is legal, go to yodelta.com and stock up on Delta 8. What is Delta 8? Well, it's found in hemp and can be legally shipped to most states, and it gets you fucking high. At yodelta.com, they have a mix of gummies, vapes, and everything you could think of for all your getting stoned needs. And Delta 8 works pretty well, so you may want to take it responsibly. But once more, just head over to yodelta.com, the official Delta 8 sponsor of the entire Gas Digital Network. So if you use the promo code GAS, you're going to get 25% off your full order. That's the promo code GAS at yodelta.com, and you will get 25% off your entire order of Delta 8 that will get you super fucking high. What more do you need to know? Yodelta.com. All right, let's get back into it. It's also funny, you touch on this in the doc, but I was guilty of this too. Going back to 94, 95, little me watching it, I thought the whole cast was gay just because one guy was gay, which is such a shitty way to look at it. But that, I think you even said that, someone said, oh, the gay show. And it's like, that's in the beginning, that's how you thought about it until you watched it more. And it was, oh no, just one guy is gay. It's not like, it was such a narrow-minded way to look at it back then.
Yeah, and I for sure, you know, and I always didn't want us to be called a gay comedy troupe because it also took a power away what we are trying to do.
Right.
You know, not that we've talked about it. And it was gay, but we're also feminine. We're feminists. We dress up as women. We understand our wives and girlfriends, and we try to embody them. And Kathy's my sister. So we weren't afraid. We just did what we felt like doing.
Well, yeah, you played females with integrity, which I don't think was very common. And that's why people looked at it in a different way. Because usually if a man played a woman on television, it was ridiculous.
Well, we don't do drag. Like, people talk about drag. We're the opposite of drag. We play characters.
Right.
So how we can even, oh my God, at 60, slip on a nice big skirt and play a woman. Because we're going to play a woman who's kind of around our age. Because we have
the teenager trying to have a threesome with the two old women.
Yeah, I'm still my
Was there ever a thought that maybe we can't put on drag, we can't put on female attire because it's not PC, or no?
No, I understand that conversation, but for us, it's just, you know, we're a blues band. We need drums. And, you know, it's like, it's been grandfathered in. We know why we're doing it. I think the people around us know why we're doing it. And as you nicely said, we're hopefully doing it with integrity.
Yeah. So to talk a little, you mentioned them, the Tall Boys. That's like a new show that you are EPing, correct? Executive producing that show, correct? And it is another, it's a sketch comedy show. It's in the first season, is that right?
There's three seasons, and it's just on Fuse now in the States, okay. which is a kind of interesting new platform. And I actually was just teaching one. I teach at Humber College, where they have a comedy course, which is crazy to think about. And one of the people, Vance Banzo, my great friend from Edmonton, was in it. And it's like, he's brilliant. I got to get him in a writer's room. And then somebody said, he's got a troupe, you know? And so I saw these guys, and they were so silly and also so dark, because they were really talking about race in a way that, you know, it's almost like Chappelle did in the day or something. They're not afraid to talk about their different points of view and be really silly. So I thought, let's do a show. So we've done three seasons. The first one's out now in Fuse, and I directed most of them. Mm-hmm. And it was part of the reason I think I wanted to do Kids in the Hall again, because I got sketch comedy back in my blood, and it was like, this really is fun. And it's really hard, you know, because you write a sketch and nothing existed before it, and you need your own location for it. And then now what do I do? It's, you know, it's not other kinds of shows where they have characters that go on and on. It's tough stuff.
Right. And you did also direct a bunch of other stuff. The one that you did, six episodes of Schitt's Creek, which is maybe one of the best modern comedies, you know, and an episode of Brooklyn Nine-Nine. You also worked with Molly Shannon. Her book is coming out now. You did Superstar. Have you kept that relationship going?
Yes, we love each other. She is the kindest, sweetest thing. And I love her book. You know, she's like a Kids in the Hall adjacent. Her beautiful damage that she didn't have a great start.
I had no idea until I read that, how tragic that was.
It's on my next book. I listen to books when I run. It's my next book to listen to is that book.
Yeah, it's amazing. And I remember her little sweet father was around when we were doing Superstar. He's always wearing a suit and shaking your hand and not wanting to get in anybody's way. But she's, we actually did a screening of Superstar just before the pandemic in San Francisco, and had a Q&A, and we love each other. We really do.
It is wild to think about how you're tied to Schitt's Creek. You're tied to SNL. You were father, what is it, Marsala on Arrested Development. Like, and kids, you're in so many legendary fucking comedy.
Well, thank you. Don't forget the Trailer Park Boys, which I direct a bunch of their stuff.
Right, of course, you did a bunch of that too. It really is wild. It says so much about, I guess, your directing ability and your comedy ability. It's just, it's wild. Who knew? Because you were, which is crazy, is that you were two separate groups that came together back then, that this would be going on 30 something years later. It's nuts.
Well, thank you. And I think that's why people like it, because it's not, you know, if you saw it when you were a young rug rat, called, and it's been a long time, but you've survived, we've survived, and you've survived. That's what I think is the sweet part about us coming back in a certain way. And it's not just the comforting sound of the shadowy man. It's like, wow, they're there. They're still trying. Wow, they're still pretty good. And I think that's about all of us.
Yeah, I was probably about 10 when I started watching you guys. And it kind of introduced you to there's just a new thing. There was new music, new sort of comedy, new kind of sketch comedy. And SNL, I thought at the time, was really, really good. It was, it slowly got into that Farley and Norm Macdonald phase. And I was going to ask that too. Like, you directed a lot of a short film sketch thing with Norm Macdonald, didn't you?
I actually did a pilot for him for Comedy Central.
Okay.
Called Ask Norm, which I'll try to find and leak onto the internet. It was really,
that would be so cool.
Yeah.
It was really funny. Yeah. So we were, you know, but I knew him from the start of stand up. Like, I used to do stand up in Ottawa and place like that, where Kids in the Hall you'd make no money, but that's when the stand up boom happened in the 80s. But if you could hold a stage for 40 minutes, you know, you'd make $500 on a weekend. What? Yeah. $500 on a weekend? That's insane. So he was around a lot. I saw him doing sets. I was probably more open for him than he opened for me, that's for sure.
What was it called, the pilot that you did with him? What was it called?
Back to Norm.
Back to Norm. I get it. I get it. It makes sense to me.
He's back to Norm.
he was my number one of all time, and I just thought it was interesting that you two worked together. And I just can imagine it was a. I'd love to see it. I couldn't find it anywhere.
Yeah, well, I will try to find it.
Oh, I like that. That's
my
exciting.
People will follow up.
So, there are you guys still going to do tour dates, or is that not going to happen?
I think we want to. We just haven't figured it out. You know, I think we will. We just haven't done it yet.
And when do you find out if you're greenlit for a second season?
Well, I don't know. For me, it's feeling like this has worked so well that why do we have to do another year?
Why? Why do you have to? Meaning like leave on a high?
Yeah. You know, can't we drop the mic and leave? I don't know. I think we're in conversations about that. We've been talking about that for a long time. So we'll figure out if we're doing it.
All still cohesively believe that Kevin is the funniest?
Kevin is the funniest. He just goes, oh, hey, hello. You know, so he is the funniest. Yeah, sometimes he even signs his email.
Is also the weirdest.
Kevin the funniest. Oh, yes. He's the weirdest. Oh,
I said his penis was the weirdest. That was weird.
That's part of it.
Well, and I say, what are you doing, Kevin? He says, I'm running downstairs. Like, oh, did you get a treadmill? No, I'm just running in circles. And I said, well, then get a fucking treadmill. We're making money now. Jesus. So that's Kevin. Oh, I do. I know. I just like running around.
Why do you think that TikTok is the new punk rock?
Well, my son is that age. He's 15 and a half. I think... because people can make whatever they want, right? You know,
I mean, that was YouTube also, though. I mean, you know, so it's not like
it's kind of been poisoned.
Yeah. Well, but I do feel with the weird things that my son shows me, I think the irreverence of it is what fuels it. Like, and there's a non sequitur quality. And like, why is that guy dressed as Homer Simpson, you know, in a shopping cart going fast into the thing and then cutting to a guy with a pie going, ha 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 ha. So I think it opens up the brains in a way, certainly that the young male comic mind and I'm sure by extension, the female comic mind, but it's just like my son is obsessed with this weird non sequitur stuff. And I think that's it. They just make it. They just make it with their two buddies in wherever, Sarasota.
Yeah. And I guess also because of the time limit, although now I think it went to 10 minutes if you want, but it allows for you to put a condensed, it's, you know, it is sketch comedy. A lot of it is just short, weird little sketches. I probably send Shannon 10 TikToks a week for her to watch that I find online. So I guess it is what it is. We're going to ask the first, but before I do, Dave, do you have any other questions for him before we go to the first?
Do you have a favorite sketch ever that you wrote and for the show?
No, not really. I was thinking about something the other day. We used to do a thing on stage. This was also in the AIDS paranoia, not paranoia, yeah. It was true, of the 80s. We did a Marx Brothers troupe called Those Fucking Something Brothers. And so we were doing a thing, we'd come out, but where are those fucking something brothers? And that's what they were called, Those Fucking Something Brothers. And, so we come out and Marx Brothered it up. And our shtick was, all we would do is spit in each other's faces. That was our act. We would just haul off and gob in each other's faces.
Jesus. And,
I know you've never seen an audience go more insane when they realize you're actually going to do it. And then you stop and then you're going to do it again and you just keep doing it. And so that's what I'm sad when you filmed.
That's rough. I couldn't do that. I couldn't.
It was
do
pretty
that.
Funny though.
All right. Yeah, so let's do the first now, Shannon.
The first time ever I saw.
The name of the show is the SDR Show, Sex, Drugs, and Rock and Roll Show. We ask every guest this since the dawn of time, the first experience with all three. We start with rock and roll. Ideally, something we're going to know, not some local Canada band that nobody gives a shit about. Something we're going to know. And then obviously, ideally, also one you went on your own volition, not one that your parents dragged you to.
Well, first of all, don't besmirch Canadian music.
I just mean an unknown Canadian band.
No. Well, my first concert was and the original Fleetwood Mac with without the women in it. Okay. Rory Gallagher, who is, I don't know if you know who Rory Gallagher was. He was a guy from a power trio called also Taste that was out of Ireland, who I loved. Mm-hmm. And of course, headlining were Deep Purple.
Right. That's a very good
concert. That's pretty really good. Good concert. Right? Yeah.
The old men Fleetwood Mac, otherwise known as the good old days.
Yeah.
Yes. Yeah, that Stevie Nicks brought nothing.
Now, the first drug that you've ever done, ideally after weed, unless weed wasn't your first drug.
No, I didn't. I don't like weed. I just can't quite do it. I was always stealing daddy's booze. It was at that concert. It was acid.
Oh, and that's cool as shit. How old are you, by the way?
13. I have a song on my record called I Did All My Acid in Grade 8. And it's kind of true.
Isn't it just called Grade 8, though, the song? I think it's just called Grade 8, right?
Well, yeah. But I sing the line, I did all my acid in grade 8.
Look at me knowing your catalog. How about that?
Yeah.
Did you love it?
I think I was such an angry, young, weird product of a broken home, alcoholic stepmother, father, that it was a nice escape.
Well, that's a good one. And did you do it more often after that?
Yeah, I did it for about a year. And somehow I stopped. I don't know.
I started about the same age as you with acid. I'm just happy to know that we have that in common.
Mm-hmm. And what about sex?
Not really good for you.
No, I'm not. It's not a good, especially at a nice growing age like that. But
well, sex, I don't have a specific memory. For me, and I say this as my children are in the outer room, it was all like these weird broken families, like so other girls and boys. It's sort of like basement hand jobs would be basically.
That was a great title for a band right there.
I know, it really would be. That was just a movie.
That was my diet until I was about 18 and had a real girlfriend.
Until you're about 18?
No, I'm talking about I'm talking about 15, 16. That would be.
Basement hand jobs. Okay, so you don't remember specifically, but that was your first foray into it, were a basement hand jobs.
Yes.
Okay, fair enough. Okay, so Kids in the Hall, the sixth season is out now. The documentary is out as well. And all the old episodes, as well as the miniseries they did, all there. Anything and everything you want to see, Bruce McCullough, is available right now, pretty much, except for that Norm Macdonald one episode pilot. Doesn't exist anywhere. Kids in the Hall online is KITH online at Instagrams. And you're going to be at the Soho Playhouse in June for Tales of Bravery and Stupidity. Is there anything else you want to plug?
No, I don't believe in plugging things.
Okay, that's why you did hand jobs. You didn't believe in plugging anything. You get it, Dave, because they're jerking things off.
I understand.
Dave, your plugs.
Oh, DaveLando.com for tour dates. That's fine.
That's it. Oh, did he rub off on you? Now you don't want to fucking plug anything?
No, that's all I got. I can think of off the top of my head. No,
you got some seats to move in Milwaukee. You'd better plug the Shine Club or whatever.
The Shine Shine Club in Milwaukee. I'll be there June 8th through 11th.
Fair enough. My other podcast is called Good Sugar. It's on health and wellness. We're opening our first location in June in New York City. And I just got booked today. Saturday, July 30th, I'll be hosting a concert with the Stone Temple Pilots, King's X, and Steven Adler from Guns N' Roses. Wow. So that'll be at the Paramount Theater in Hudson Valley. I'll be there.
Wow. That sounds like a rough gig. That is a really rough gig. I hope you don't bomb.
I think I'll be all right. We'll see what happens.
Be very nervous.
And honestly, dude, it was such an honor to have you on, Bruce. We usually end the show letting our guests pick a song to add to the sdrshow.com/playlist. Do you have a song that you'd like to add to the playlist?
Let's go Lost in the Supermarket by The Clash.
All right, we'll do that. It's punk rock.
My emotional go-to, yeah.
Okay, good enough. And Shannon, your plugs?
You can follow me on Instagram at ShannonLee6982 and listen to my podcast, The Thing Is Ding. We talk about bad dates, fighting, and ghosts. We have all sorts of interesting guests come on, comedians, musicians, TV, reality TV stars, and porn stars, and they tell their own personal stories about their worst date experience, a time they got into a street fight, and an experience with the paranormal.
Okay, now, Bruce, do not give any indication. We are going to guess, does Bruce McCullough believe in ghosts? Dave, what are your thoughts?
Yes.
Shannon, what are your thoughts?
Yes.
I'm going no. Bruce, do you believe in ghosts?
Damn it.
Shannon, I always lose this one.
I always win this game. I always win this game. Thank you so much, Bruce, for coming on the show.
Thank you so much. It was been a pleasure.
See you next time on the SDR show. Peace.
personality. I wasn't born so much as I fell out. Nobody seemed to notice me. We had a hedge back home in the suburb over which I never could see. I heard the people who live on the ceiling scream and fight for scarily. Hearing that noise was my first ever feeling. That's how it's been all around me. I'm all lost in the supermarket. I can no longer shop happily. I came in here for a special offer, a guaranteed personality. I'm all tuned in, I see all the programs. I save coupons with packets of tea. I've got my giant hit discotheque album. I empty a bottle, I feel a bit free. Kids in halls and the pipes in the walls make me noises for company. Long distance callers make long distance calls. Lost in the supermarket, I can no longer shop happily. I came in here for the special offer, a guaranteed personality. It's not here. Special offer, guaranteed personality. I'm all lost in the supermarket. I can no longer shop happily. I came in here for a special offer, guaranteed personality. I'm all lost.
You've been listening to the SDR Show.